Blog Talk Radio.
All right, good afternoon, y'all. Back again. Hopefully, y'all can hear me. Give me a second. I am live right now. Hold on, I had somebody that tried to contact me. And she wanted to talk. So I have to see what she wants. I really need to clean off my office desk. Let me call her now. I'm going to call her on my other phone. Let's see. I'm about to call you right now. I'm not sure if she's watching, but let me call her right now. What is it? Give me a second, y'all. I'll be right back.
Hello. Hey, yeah, you can call into the show right now. All right. All right, y'all. Give me a second, y'all. Give me one second. Okay. All right.
Sorry about that, y'all. Let me check the lines and see what we got. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and turn the microphone on right now, Candace. Is it on? Oh, I turned it on. Let me see if it's on. Hey, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, how you been?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you pretty good.
All right. I'm doing all right. I'm all right, I guess you can say. More and more every day I'm finding stuff out about my case.
what,
I got a few questions there.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so overall my case is a kidnapping case. Yes, I realize that everybody says all DHR cases are kidnapping cases. However, this is a true non-DHR kidnapping case. DHR just used their power, them being who they are, to use the situation at hand. And the reason why I say that it is a true kidnapping case is because of the fact, number one, there was no search warrant. There was no warrant at all, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There was no
mm-hmm.
call to CPS. There was no call to the police or anything like that. The only reason why DHR actually got involved was because of the fact that my daughter was in a home where the individuals, they were actually in the process of becoming foster parents.
Okay.
DHR come out to their home to do a home study, and my daughter was there. Now, her geographical location since birth has been Anniston, Alabama. DHR got involved with her in Jacksonville, Alabama. Okay. Now, at this time, I was falsely incarcerated in Chambers County. Now, when she was a month and a half old, I had a legal binding document that was handwritten. It was hand-signed, and it was notarized, giving the people who adopted her, their mother, full custody of my daughter until further necessary, until we deemed necessary, okay?
Okay,
there
so
wasn't no ending date or anything like that. Huh?
So you're saying that, I guess, before you went you know, to prison or whatever. You gave somebody temporary custody of her, at least until you got your life straight, or until you got out of jail or something like that?
No, what it was when she was first born, DHR was trying to get her then. They was actually trying to do a medical kidnap. She was in the hospital. She was born at 34 weeks with gastroschisis. She was a gastroschisis baby. DHR tried to come in at that time, being that she had a medical condition.
Okay.
Now, her address has been the same exact address from the day that she come home from the hospital, while she was in the hospital, the same address then has it been today. It's never changed. I've never changed it. Now, if there was a true need for DHR to be involved, first off, it should have went to Sandra Kiker. If not then, it should have came to me. Now, I was in Chambers County, so that would have put Chambers County involved. However, Etowah County Department of Human Resources is the one who ends up getting custody of my daughter. Now, they're nowhere into play. It should have been Calhoun County, or it should have been Chambers County, not Etowah County. So it's kidnapping. They didn't even notify me until 8 days later. I missed the shelter care hearing because they failed to notify me to let me know that there was a shelter care hearing. Therefore, I couldn't hire an attorney. I couldn't let the judge know what was going on or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have, for 2-3 months, I didn't even have an attorney.
You said for 14 months?
I mean, it's literally kidnapping.
Huh?
What'd you say?
You said for 14 months you didn't have an attorney?
No, I didn't have about two or three months I didn't have an attorney.
Okay.
There's major due process issues there. There's jurisdiction issues there. I mean,
yeah,
it's a straight kidnapping.
Like
I should be able to...
It sounds like a mixture of everything what you just said to me. That's what it sounds like to me. That due process.
It is. It's a mean.
When they violate due, ain't there's no statutes of limitations on due process. But do you remember when I was telling you that because there is so much corruption around this case, you're probably not going to find any attorney that'll take the case.
Oh, no. There's not going to be an attorney that takes this case. I'm going to end up having a private prosecutor. However, I have put together a few forms that I'm going to submit. I really honestly – okay, so I wrote the sheriff a letter because I want to honestly go through him first,
mm-hmm.
being that, number one, it's his duty to. However, which I do have a letter that I wrote up. I, you know, told him what his duties was, told him that, you know, hey, look, you signed an oath, you have a bond of everything like that. Your responsibility is to uphold, you know, the Constitution and the people, yada, yada, yada. Also
mm-hmm.
incited in there that as a sheriff, it's also his responsibility to make sure that each and every inmate has had due process, by that meaning a, you know, a procurement or a grand jury trial.
Yeah, you're right. That's his, the reason for that is because the county jail, he's the chief officer over the county jail. He's over, if I'm not mistaken, he's over the warden. That's the sheriff's jail, so to speak, even though it's...
Yeah, that's the sheriff's jail.
Even though he doesn't really own it. Hold on. Give me a second. Sorry about that. But even though he doesn't own it, he is the duly elected public servant that was elected by the people. So all of his jurisdiction is all over the county in which the people elected him in. And that's that county jail, that's who if any of your rights were violated or something like that, you would have to sue the sheriff and the warden and so on and so forth like that.
Right. Well, I mean, I've got Randolph County, who I'm currently suing right now, I have a federal class action lawsuit against them for debtor's prison.
So they put you in jail for a monetary judgment or something like that?
Because I wasn't able to pay my bond to get out.
Uh-huh.
My bond was $7,500, and if I had not paid my bond, you know, I would have lost everything I had, which I still, at the end of the day, I still lost everything I had. But they're not supposed to keep you in jail just because you can't pay a bond.
No, they're not.
That's illegal.
They're not. You might, I don't know. You might be able to sue them for that. You might be able to do it. I mean, they did violate due process.
SPLC is the one that picked that up.
You say who?
The SPLC, the ACLU, and the Civil Rights Union.
Oh, okay. So somebody prosecuting the case for you.
Yeah. They're the one that actually come to me while I was in the county.
Okay.
I didn't seek them out. They couldn't seek me out.
Gotcha.
There's
okay.
6 attorneys on this case.
You said there's 6 of them?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I honestly hate that you had to go through all that, especially about your daughter. These people play dirty games. I can't stand these people. I hate them. They just don't play fair, and they think they can do whatever the hell they want to do. They really think that they can do whatever the hell they want to do.
And then I found out, like, so much stuff. Like, okay, so part of the issue that I've got going on here is, okay, so like I told you, I was going to go through the sheriff. I tried to go through him first.
Yeah.
Process, I was looking up his information. That way I can send him out his letter. It's a 9-page letter. It also tells him how my order – my TDR order is null and void on face value.
Uh-huh.
And I also placed in with the notice of a void order that I'm also going to be sending out to the judge as well. I put that in there, and I've got to print off a copy of the TDR. I'm sending all 3 of them documents to the sheriff.
You know the sheriff has a bond, right?
Yes, I do.
He has a...
However, the reason why I'm going through the sheriff first is, like I told you, it's a kidnapping versus it being a DHR case. Like, it's a true kidnapping.
I got you. I know what you mean.
So, I'm going to go through...
Hello?
Hello? You there?
Yeah. Yeah, I can hear you now. I guess you must have been going in and out or something like that.
Well, I'm in the process of folding clothes, so I apologize.
Oh, okay.
I've actually got a few documents that I'm going to be submitting to the courts as well. And I don't even know if they're going to be the right documents or not, but however, seeing that I don't have an attorney and I don't exactly know, you know, what it is that I need to file, being that it is a void ab initio.
You probably don't know how to draft any of these pleadings that I'm talking about. Well, you probably think that you don't know how to draft, but all of this stuff is really, really easy to draft. It's all easy. But you could do a either you can file it. I don't know if I sent that to you or somebody else. But you can do a motion to reconsider. It's a motion to vacate the void judgment. I think it's under Rule 60 or something like that for due process.
Yeah, it's a Rule 60B. But see, here's the thing though. The only thing that, like, I thought about that, to be honest. And I also thought about it doing a writ of certiorari. However, with it being a void order altogether, with it being a kidnapping, I don't feel like I should have to go to the courts to do all this. They stole my child.
Yeah,
straight
I know
up.
What you mean. You don't. You honestly, you don't. But they're not gonna play fair. I'm just telling you that right now. They are not gonna play fair.
They already ain't playing fair.
Yeah, you
yeah,
really
no,
shouldn't have
to.
Go. Yeah, you really shouldn't have to go through all of that.
The FBI's got my case in their office. Homeland Security's got my case in their office. And the ADO's got my case in their office. However, I haven't heard anything from any of them. I spoke with Army CID last week. And literally, the lady told me that I need to soften my language and I sound like a conspiracy theorist. Because I've straight out told them, hey, look, this is a kidnapping and this is a, well, actually I told them it was an abduction and a trafficking case because that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, that's what it is. The people, these people don't really know. They don't know what's going on for real. Some of them do and some of them don't. They don't really, they're not familiar with the so-called legal terminology and legalese and stuff like that. They don't know that when public servants do stuff like this without a lawful purpose, then it is in fact kidnapping. That's what it is. Anytime they do stuff like this without a lawful purpose, meaning a purpose that is authorized under the common law by the Constitution or something like that, then they've committed a crime. An actual crime, not an offense. They've committed a crime. And because there's an actual injured party. That would be you.
Correct. It's just like these attorneys. They don't even know the law. If they want to, I don't care. They go to school for policy and procedures. That's it.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Some of them, you know, they venture out and they take the time to actually learn law. But the way you're going to, if you want to know, like, actual law, you're going to have to read a lot of cases. That's really it. That's the only thing that you need to do is read cases to know what's going on. You need to read old cases and you need to read, you know, new cases to know what's going on. That's why I always read a lot of old cases in Alabama so I can know what happened in the past that is affecting today.
Well, see, here's the thing, though. I have not seen not a single case that is anything like mine. I still have, like, here's the thing. I can prove without a shadow of a doubt that this is a second generation issue. I still have a case from my adoption from when I was a child, okay, back in 2003, it is still open. My adoption.
Your case?
Yes.
20 years ago?
Yes, absolutely.
That's interesting.
I mean, there's so much crazy stuff about my case, it's unreal.
They don't play fair, man. I wish there was enough fed up people so that change can be brought. But don't nobody really ever pay attention to this stuff until it's them, until their rights are being violated and so on and so forth like that. I hate that. I really do hate that. Like I'm on my Facebook page now and I go live on here just to try to help people. And sometimes, you know, I really don't have a lot of people on here. It's like something, they're not really paying attention to what's going on. And they never really will until it's happening to them. That's when they want to pay attention and that's when they contact me and they have all these questions for me. It's crazy, for real. You didn't know what?
I didn't know anything about this page until what, last year?
Yeah, how did you find me anyway? You must have found me on Facebook. Yeah, I think you did find me on Facebook.
Yeah, I did. I found you on Facebook. I had just come across because I was out looking for some help, really.
Uh-huh.
And so I started looking to see what Alabama had.
Well,
and
you
actually,
are...
that's another thing.
What's that?
We don't have nothing here in the state of Alabama to help none of the parents. That's why I've actually got something that I've been putting together. I actually am a part of a 501c3. It's based out of Michigan. It's called Voiceless Angels Incorporated.
Uh-huh.
It's actually to help individuals like myself to get through the court system. I have a lot of knowledge on my own end. My thing is actually like writing down the motions and stuff. Putting my knowledge into practice. There you go.
Yeah, Candace, I'm telling you, it's so easy. This is all you're doing. Did I send you a copy of that rule of 60B motion to vacate a void judgment? Did I send you a copy of that?
You may have a long time ago. I can't remember.
This is what you're doing. And you're going to do this on pretty much everything. You're going to say, comes now, pursuant to Rule 60B of the Alabama Rules of Civil Procedure, to vacate this judgment for due process violations or something like that as a matter of law. So what you do is you state the facts in which you are basing the motion on, the whole purpose of the motion. You have to state the facts. It's always about the facts. The facts are the elements that the court needs to determine if what you're seeking should be done or not, so to speak. That's all you're doing. That's what you're doing on a motion, a complaint, a divorce complaint, a writ, an appeal. It don't matter what it is. That is exactly what you're doing. It's always about the facts. The facts are the prerequisite elements that the court needs. So this is what will happen when you file that petition or that Rule 60B. The so-called court, which is not a court, it's an administrative agency. The so-called judge is going to look at those facts, and the judge is going to apply the relevant case law to those set of facts to determine if those facts warrant that judgment to be set aside or vacated. That's it.
Well, you know what? My thing is, like, okay, so what about jurisdiction? Because, you know, jurisdiction can be questioned at any time.
When they violate due process, ain't no statutes of limitations on that jurisdiction. A due process violation would be something like a case that they adjudicated and they never had the authority to adjudicate it. In other words, they didn't have the jurisdiction to adjudicate it. You can do that anytime.
They didn't have jurisdiction.
Yeah, you can do that at any time. Anytime. You can do that anytime. So I'm telling you, Candace, you can do this, Candace. You can put this on paper. It's easy. I promise you, it is so easy. You can do this. Don't come on here saying you can't because you never even tried it. Have you tried it?
Actually, to tell you, to be honest with you, I've got a few documents that I've personally wrote up myself. Now, if they're right, that's a whole different story.
This is how you determine if they're right is the case law. First, all right, this is what you say. Let's say that you were stopped in a traffic stop or whatever, and the police officer never had reasonable suspicion or probable cause to stop you and detain you and so on and so forth like that. But let's say they found some weed in the car or something like that. So what you would do, pursuant to the due process clause, you don't even need a rule for that. You can cite a Supreme Court case in support of that, in support of your motion to suppress that evidence because they violated due process. So how you would argue that is, you would say on such and such date at such and such time, the alleged defendant was traveling at such and such time, and then such and such officer pulled such and such defendant over or whatever. Defendant did not receive any traffic citation from the police officer on such and such. Stuff like that. Once you do that, the judge is going to make all reasonable inferences, and then they're going to take the facts and they're going to apply the case law to those set of facts and determine if that evidence should be suppressed or not based on what the law says, based on what the law says as it is applied to these set of facts. That's it. I don't care what you're doing. That is the only thing that you're doing. When I sued the police in federal court in 2021, I only listed facts. That complaint was so good that the attorney who they hired, he filed 4 consecutive shotgun pleadings because he didn't know how to answer my complaint without losing immunity for his defendants, for his clients. He didn't know how to answer the complaint. So he filed a shotgun pleading 4 times. He did it 4 times. And this is an attorney. He's been an attorney longer than I've been drafting cases and whatever. And he didn't know how to answer this complaint. So he filed a shotgun pleading. A shotgun pleading is... it's something that it really doesn't make sense. It's used to confuse you and I guess like daze you, and it violates the civil rules of procedure that relate to how pleadings should be made in the case.
Okay, can I read something to you that I actually wrote up?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, it's a void judgment due to the lack of due process under the color of law. December 6, 2019 at 3 p.m., Etowah County Department of Human Resources Supervisor Sabrina DeRamus and social worker Brittany Stutter came before the Etowah County Juvenile Court in front of Judge Joe F. Neighbors to petition dependency on the said child, Cadence Serenity Lynn Parslow, at the shelter care hearing. The mother, Candace K. Edwards, at the present moment was incarcerated in Chambers County Jail waiting to go to prison at Julia Tutwiler Women's Prison in Elmore County, Alabama. Edwards was not properly notified of the fed shelter care because the mother was not properly notified under the color of law. Edwards was not given the ability to hire counsel, nor was she able to communicate with the judge of her current position and situation at hand. 2 months after the fact that Cadence Serenity Lynn Parslow was born, the biological mother had a legal binding document handwritten, signed, and notarized, giving Sandra Cracker physical custody of the said child. Geographical location is the same exact address that the said child came home from the hospital. This child's address has never changed. The location is Anniston, Alabama. Because of the fact that this said mother was incarcerated and not given full due process to the hearing, Etowah County Department of Human Resources ended up getting dependency in said child. What we're dealing with here is a substantive due process and procedure due process. Procedure due process concerns the procedure that the government must follow before it deprives the individual of life, liberty, or property. Making room for innovations, the court has determined that due process requires notice and opportunity to be heard with an impartial tribunal. In the wake of Griswold, the court expanded substantive due process jurisprudence to protect the panoply of liberties, including the rights of interracial couples to marry, 1967, the rights of unmarried individuals to contraception, 1972, the right to abortion, 1973, the right to engage in intimate sexual conduct, 2003, the right to same-sex couples, hold on. There we go. Ah, crap.
You good?
Okay,
you got time.
Here we go.
You got time.
Same-sex couples to marry in 2015. The substantive due process jurisprudence has been among the most controversial areas of the Supreme Court adjudication. The concern is that the 5 unelected justices of the Supreme Court can impose their policy preferences on the nation, given that, by definition, unmerited rights do not flow directly from the text of the Constitution. Kelson versus Springfield, 767 F2D 651 Ninth Circuit, 1985, Supreme Court in the Ninth Circuit proceeding established that the parent has a constitutionally protected liberty interest in the companionship and solidity of his or her child. The state's interference with that liberty interest without due process of law remedial under the 1987. Slaughterhouse cases wrote that the due process clause protected individuals from state legislation that infringes upon their privileges and immunities under the federal constitution. While there is no definitive list of the required procedure that due process requires, Judge Henry Friendly generated a list that remains highly influential as to both content and relative priority. Number 1, the right to cross-examine adverse witnesses. Number 2, the right to present evidence, including the right to call witnesses. Number 3, the right to know opposing evidence. Number four, decision based exclusively on the evidence presented. Four, an unbiased tribunal. Five, unbiased tribunal. Six, notice of proposed action and the grounds asserted for it. Seven, opportunity to present reasons why the proposed action should not be taken. Eight, opportunity to be represented by counsel. Nine, requirement that the tribunal prepares written findings of fact and reasons for its decision. 10, requirement that the tribunal prepare a record of evidence presented. This is not a list of procedures that are required to prove due process, but rather a list of kinds of procedures that might be claimed in a due process argument, roughly in order of their procedures. Title 5 U.S.C. 556D, Section 557, Section 706. Courts lose jurisdiction if they do not follow due process. An order that exceeds the jurisdiction comes into issue. See Rose Heimlich, 1808. This is a list for due process, not only for the criminal, but also civil as well as family. You must explain findings that can place property or liberty in peril. Number one, give notice of charges and changes. Two, clear violation of particular standards of conduct. Three, time to refute what you are being accused of. Four, there must be a hearing before trial. Five, deprive life, liberty, and the credible evidence that support the charges. Woolley versus City of Baton Rouge. The defendants could not lawfully seize a child without a warrant or the existence of probable cause to believe the child was in imminent danger of harm. Where the police were not informed of any abuser of the child prior to arriving at the caretaker's home and found no evidence of abuse while there was seizure of the child was not objectively reasonably and violated clearly established Fourth Amendment rights of the child. Morris versus Dearborn. Rights of procedure due process violated. The state denied the plaintiff the fundamental right to a fair procedure before having their child removed by the intentional use of fraudulent evidence during the procedure. My bad. People versus Bennett, 1923. In reversing the conviction of a teacher who violated the law, court held that due process clause protected the power of parents to control the education of their own children. Lawrence versus Texas. In protecting the right to live as an untraditional family under the due process clause, 381 U.S.C. 479 Griswold versus Connecticut, 1965. The Constitution also protects the individual interest in avoiding disclosure of personal matters. Federal courts and state courts under Griswold can protect under the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness phrase of the Declaration of Independence. The right of a man to enjoy the mutual care, company, love, and affection of his child, and this cannot be taken away from him without due process of law. There's a family right to privacy which state cannot invade or it becomes actionable for civil rights damage. Wiseman versus Reinhart. Wiseman filed this action against juvenile officers and social workers claiming they violated plaintiff constitutional rights of familial association. Denying the plaintiff's due process of law, defendants filed a motion to dismiss contending that plaintiff's claims were not actually under 42 U.S.C. 1983. Lassiter versus Department of Social Services, 452 U.S., 1981. The court held that parents have a due process right to a fundamental fair procedure that may require the appointment of counsel. In the light of this extensive proceeding, it cannot now be doubted that the due process clause of the 14th Amendment protects the fundamental right of parents to make delay concerning the care, custody, and control of their children, Troxell versus Granville. How are the courts able to determine the best interest of the child which falls under the care and control of the child? The Constitution protects the fundamental rights of parents to make decisions concerning the care, custody, upbringing, management, and the control of their children. Troxell versus Granville. Any motive to protect a child from abuse does not override a parent's constitutional right. Friends versus Little. Termination of parental rights is completely unconstitutional because it violates life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. There can be no sanction or penalty imposed upon one because of this exercise of constitutional rights. Sheriff versus Cullen. State cannot diminish rights of the people. Hurtado versus People of the State. Termination of parental rights is a protected fundamental right and an unalienable right that cannot be touched. The whole TBR process is unconstitutional as well as null and void on face value.
Okay. Is that some type of motion that you drafted?
It was a void judgment due to the lack of due process under the color of law.
Okay. It sounds good. You really don't even need all of that stuff in there, to be honest. Some of it was irrelevant. Some of it was. Most of it sounded relevant. I think I would need to see that petition for dependency to see if they even had grounds to properly invoke that administrative court's jurisdiction. Because if they don't cite grounds to properly invoke that administrative agency's jurisdiction, then it's still void. And they have to do that under, I forgot the statute, but it's under some statute. And within that statute, there are about maybe 12 to 13 subsections within that statute as a basis for properly invoking that administrative agency's jurisdiction. I'm gonna call it an agency. I'm not gonna call it a court. That administrative agency's jurisdiction. And they have the same way. All of this stuff, it works the same way. The same way that I cannot sue the police officers. I can't say that a police officer unlawfully arrested me and assaulted and battered me without the facts supporting how I came to that conclusion. I can't do that because that's a violation of due process. That's on the civil side. And they can't do that on the criminal side either. They can't say you committed disorderly conduct by making loud, unreasonable noise without the facts stating and supporting how they came to that conclusion. It works the same way in your case, too. They have to allege facts in support of their conclusion on how they came to the conclusion that your child was allegedly dependent upon the state to properly invoke that administrative agency's jurisdiction. Does that make sense?
It does. What they say in this petition is that because I was incarcerated. However, I already had something in place when all that went down. I had a legal binding document
That judgment is void. That judgment is void because you had a private, that's private. That is a private contract. And that judgment is void. I'm telling you right now, it's void. Void, 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 void. Let's say if me and this dude, Hold on, Candace. Let me explain something to you. Anytime two individuals make a private contract, let's say that me and this dude, we get into a fight. But before we get into a fight, let's say I'm a celebrity, you know, and I got all this money or whatever. And me and this dude want to fight me or whatever. And I say, okay, we'll fight, but you got to sign this waiver saying that you ain't going to prosecute me and trying to sue me for damages, and you ain't going to sign any warrants on me to, you know, try to get me to go to jail or something like that. And he signed that. And then we fight, and then he tries to sue me, and he tries to, you know, procreate quasi-criminal charges against me. As soon as I tell the judge that, they're going to throw that case out. It's over with. They're going to throw that case out. Because if they don't, then they are infringing on your right to contract. That's an agreement, a contract. Agreements are governed by contract principles. I got somebody else with their hand raised. Candace, can you hold on and we can jump back into it once I talk to them.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm gonna turn the microphone off and I'm gonna turn them on.
How
can you what?
How can I hear the whole conversation? Because ain't it on like a radio? Because I don't know if you're just muting me out or if I won't be able to hear or.
It's on the radio. You should be able to hear it. I'm going to go back to your headphones or whatever. And we'll do it like that. What is this? Okay. All right, just press 1 when you want to talk back to me again. Let me talk to this other caller, Candace.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Let's see. All right, caller 1233. Sorry for the hold. Good evening. How you doing?
Good, brother. How you doing?
I'm good. What can I do for you, man?
I was listening to that conversation, and it kind of sparked an idea for me as far as what I'm trying to accomplish, which is coming in with, like, a similar approach of voiding out my judgment. So the scenario is I was pulled over for a taillight or for my headlights being off. And then after that, you know, I was given a DUI.
Okay.
So I was thinking that, you know, it's a violation of due process on the fact that, you know, for the initial reason for pulling me over is a civil violation, not a criminal violation. So therefore, pursuant to, you know, the Arizona revised statutes, they're impeding on my right to travel. But, you know, pursuant to the Arizona revised statutes, they're only allowed to use their emergency lights in an emergency or when they're responding to a crime. So does that kind of make sense so far of like the direction that I'm kind of going?
Yeah, I've actually heard of it before. I really haven't dived in, you know, too deep into the study to comment on the truthfulness of it. But I can tell you that the right to travel is true. I don't know if you listen to Yusuf L, but Yusuf is correct. They are construing everything as if it is commercial, because that is where that they are so-called supreme. So what they're doing is they've made all crimes commercial. So they can regulate interstate and interstate commerce via statute in the form of civil law. That is what they're doing. They're regulating interstate and interstate commerce through statute. That's what they're doing. And it seems like that there's just a presumption or some type of silent judicial notice that is actually what they're doing. They're telling their colleagues that this is what they're doing without telling their colleagues that this is actually what they're doing. So you have to read in between the lines.
Yeah.
I would say, I mean, you're right. You do have the right to travel and all that stuff, but that is a very, very controversial argument, and they're going to make fun of you or something like that. They're either going to ignore you or make fun of you or threaten you or something like that to try to get you into submission to what they're doing to you or what they've already done to you. The reason is because let's say, you know, in Arizona this is all about so-called money, man. That's really what this stuff is all about. So I'm gonna do some math right quick just to give you a better understanding. So let's say and it is civil too, by the way. It is civil. All of it is civil because they're doing it in
right. Yeah, even though that they claim the DUI to be criminal.
No, it's quasi-criminal.
Right. Yeah.
In other words, it's civil, but they're going to treat it as if it's criminal. That's what they're doing. But Arizona.
Yeah.
Let's say that there are, we'll say it's 5 million people in Arizona. Okay. So let's say we're going to presume that all 5 million of these people have a driver's license. And let's say if the driver's license in Arizona, we're going to say it's $40. So if you do 5 million times $40, that's $20 million in revenue. Do you think that they're going to tell you that you don't need a driver's license?
And I understand all of that. And then how you were talking about, you know, that they're going to push to basically, like, throw it in my face or just laugh at me or discount it. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, the case is already closed out and stuff from, like, a year or two ago. I've talked to you before, you know, my intentions of just getting it deleted was just because, you know, I'm trying to go into the military, and I just would like to just have that off the record.
Now, you probably can get it expunged. You probably can do that.
Right, yeah. But I'd rather just have it deleted because I had gotten, actually, just recently, I got a court order for the police department and the courts in the area to do a complete destruction of records for the three felonies that I had. So, you know, I'm basically trying to do the same thing, except the scenario is different. The reason why I was able to get those three felonies destroyed, the police report destroyed, like any records pertaining to that incident destroyed, was just for the fact that I was able to, that case was dismissed. Therefore, there was never no convictions. So that was basically like the biggest reason why I was able to just get it all deleted.
Well, you can get convictions expunged too. You can get convictions expunged.
Right, so yeah. The other approach that I was thinking.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, the approach that I was thinking of doing it prior to just filing any paperwork or anything was putting in a motion to have a meeting in the judge's chambers. That way I can just try to privately talk about it before moving forward, and hopefully it'll get resolved there. You know what I mean?
I mean, you can probably try it, but all of that, I mean, they have a lot of discretion to do almost anything or whatever. So maybe they'll, you know, maybe they'll set a hearing, maybe they won't. If I were you, I would just go ahead and get it expunged. That's what I would do. I would go and read the statutes in Arizona that explain what types of cases can be expunged and what types of cases can't be expunged, and then I would file a petition for an expungement in the proper court. I'm not sure if it's district court or circuit court or whatever they call the courts in Arizona. That's what I would do. And then, you know, you're going to have to pay some type of administrative filing fee to get that, you know, to get the case going. But after that, I mean, it should be, you know, clear cut. Once it's expunged from your record, the record, it's sealed. So it's as if it never happened.
Right, yeah. Well, see, and then that's the reason why I would rather, why I'm trying to move. That would be like a last resort. My initial, you know, intention is try to get it completely just removed from all records.
Yes, it's
sealed, but it's still there within, you know, for them to just review in the event something happens later in the future, or for any, you know, any of the other three-letter agencies want to do like a background check or something. They would be able to find it.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's the part that I'm trying to avoid.
To a certain degree, they probably will be able to find it. So I definitely understand where you're coming from, but that's the only thing that I can tell you. That's the only thing that I can tell you. Other than you can try it your way, you know, maybe it'll work, maybe. But they just, you know,
right.
Stuff like this, they really don't play fair because they don't want people to know what's going on. They don't want.
Yeah,
like,
and see, and that's my intention behind trying to, you know, do a motion to have a meeting in the judge's chambers to talk about it in the chambers. You know what I mean? Before I just take my own action and filing paperwork into the record.
Well, you can try, you know, try it your way. And if that way doesn't work, then I would suggest you file a petition for an expungement. And if you need help with the expungement, you know, I can look through the Arizona rules of or statutes or whatever it is. It's some statute or whatever. You know, I can look in there and I can help you.
Right. Yeah. So, what do you think? What do you think so far, as far as like, you know, the lack of due process and the fact that, you know, they're pulling me over a civil matter?
I agree with you.
You know what I mean? So it's basically like you know they're violating their own process of just even pulling somebody over using their emergency lights. Like, that's just one thing. And then my other question is that citation considered, so it is the complaint, but is it also considered the summons?
I say no, but it depends on what they're going to say in Arizona. It might say complaint and summons. Like, if I'm not mistaken, in Alabama, on the traffic ticket, it says traffic ticket, complaint and summons or something like that. So it's like all of them at the same time or whatever, like that, which is weird.
Right, actually. Yeah. And when I was looking at the complaint, you know, it doesn't say that it's a summons. It just says that, you know, by signing you agree to show up on court, basically as if like it's a contract. You know what I mean? Because that's what it is.
It's a
contract. However, it doesn't appear to seem as if it's a summons, just a complaint.
Here in Alabama, when a police officer stops you and they let you go, there's a presumption that, if I'm not mistaken, there's a bond. But you're not signing anything. It's just a presumption. But in other words, they're going to release you on your own recognizance. It's a bond. But yours, you used to have to sign it in Alabama. You used to have to sign it, or they would take you to jail or something like that. If you didn't sign it. But in your case, that's a bond, because I'm quite sure if you would have refused to sign that, he would have took you to jail. So you just signed a recognizance. That's a signature bond, what you signed. And so to say, it seems like it's a mixture of all of that, because that's what a signature, that's how you know it's admiralty. That is one of the bonds in admiralty. A signature bond is a bond in admiralty.
Right. That's interesting that you say that.
Huh?
Okay, that's interesting that you say that, because that's something that, like, I just came across, you know, the conversations about a signature bond. And,
yeah.
You know, and just that you bringing it up is just like, oh, shit, what a coincidence.
That's an admiralty bond. They call it OR, own recognizance, or something like that, or signature bond. All of those names are what they call it. That is a bond of the admiralty jurisdiction.
If
you read Clerk's Practice, I'm not sure if you ever heard of Yusuf say it, but if you read Clerk's Practice, that is one of the bonds that they talk about in Clerk's Practice.
Okay, yeah, I'll definitely look more into that. And you said it's on Yusuf's page, or I could just Google Clerk's, what did you call it, the Clerk's Practice?
Clerk's Practice. As a matter of fact, I'm going to read you some of it right now. Give me 1 second. Because I posted
I appreciate it.
On my page, I'm going to read you some of it. You got to scroll down and find it. Come on, right here. I'm almost there. Give me a second. Is it in this one? I think it's in this one right here. Where is it at? Here it is, right here. All right, you still there? Hello?
Yeah, I'm still here. Sorry about that.
Okay, now you good. Okay, now they use Latin terms in here. Some of this stuff I can't pronounce. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pronounce the Latin term in English. That's what I'm going to do. So, it says, in admiralty courts, bonds are called securities or cautions and are agreed upon between the parties in one of the four following types of bonds. The first bond is called by sureties. This is called a surety bond where a bailman This is called a surety bond where a bailman company issues a bond, i.e. promise, to the court on behalf of the defendant and becomes a surety on the bail. I've bond out of jail on one of those types of bonds before, a surety bond. I've used one of those types of bonds before in Alabama. Let's go to the number two. This bond is called a deposit. This is called a property bond where real property is pledged as a surety for the bail. A pledge is a transfer, bailment, or deposit of personal property as security for a debt. If you go to Corpus Juris Secundum 72, page, pledges, section 3, you'll find that. Thus, a pledge is a special form of a bailment in connection with a debt. The third one, by oath. This is the one we were just talking about. I bond out of jail. Well, I never used the property bond to bond out of jail, too, but the bond that I'm about to talk about now, I've used that bond before to get out of jail. This is called by oath. This is called a personal recognizance bond, a.k.a. signature bond. The security, i.e. bond, is given when a party is too poor to find sureties at the discretion of the court. And the fourth one, it says a bare promise. This security is unknown in the admiralty courts of the United States. Now, I have somebody on the line. She's actually, I'm not sure where she is now. It really doesn't matter. But she's from Alabama, so I'm going to read this. Because what I did was I cross-referenced these bonds that were that were mentioned in the in clerk's practice, and I cross-referenced these bonds in the statute of Alabama, of the Code of Alabama 1975. So we have four types of bonds in Alabama. One bond is called a cash bail. Cash bail is where cash in the amount equal to or part of the total sum of the bail is paid unto the court. Judicial public bail. Notice that they're calling this stuff different names. They're not calling it what I just told you, that clerks practice.
Right.
They're using different terms, but the elements, the ingredients are still the same. Judicial public bail is where a defendant is released without any security. It is granted only when the defendant meets the requirements of Section 15, 13, 145. This is also called a personal recognizance, a.k.a. signature bond. Professional surety. Professional surety bills where a qualified company issues a bond to the court on behalf of the defendant and becomes a surety on the bail. That is an admiralty bond. These are admiralty bonds that I'm reading to you. Property bail. This is the last one. Property bails where a real party is pledged as a surety for the bail. Didn't I just read you all three of these types of bonds that were specified in admiralty courts? Don't they sound the same? These are the same types of bonds.
Right, and right.
These are the same exact types of bonds with the exception of one. Hold on, let me see. I had somebody inbox me. I'm sorry. Let me see what they wanted.
Okay. So essentially, since it's over a civil matter, it's commercial in nature, and it's over money or a debt, isn't that also another basically like a violation, or just them not doing things right, as, you know, someone's not supposed to be in prison over debt?
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct, but I've read a case that was they were kind of trying to justify it or something like that. So I can't really explain it right now because I would need to read that case some more. But yeah, so what they're doing is when they procreate these so-called criminal charges against you, they're not criminal, they're civil, because the nature of the action is admiralty. So what they're doing is they're trying to get a judgment against you. Once they get a judgment against you, then they're going to file a lien against you, because that is the only way that you can get that they can all file a lien against you is with a judgment. So in other words, a prerequisite of a valid lien is a valid judgment. That's why they're suing you. It's a lawsuit going on. They're suing you. They're filing a lawsuit against you. And once they get a judgment against
right.
you, they're going to file a lien against all of your property. Your property meaning everything. Your body too. Until the tax, i.e., or until the charge is paid. That's what they're doing.
Yeah.
That is exactly what they're doing. They're not going to tell you that. Like Yusuf cites a case in Georgia. He cites a statute in Georgia. That's one of the states that do it. That actually tells you what they're doing. Georgia is not the only one doing that. Because let's say if you sued somebody in a civil case, and they didn't want to they didn't want to pony up, they didn't want to pay you or so whatever, then you can file a writ of execution and put them on the stand and tell them, you know, and force them to tell you where their assets are. And once you have their assets or whatever, you can file a lien against all of their property because you have a valid judgment. You cannot file a lien without a judgment. That's why some people are going to jail when they file liens against judges, because they don't have a judgment against the judge yet. That's why it's so hard to sue a judge, because once they're sued, people are going to start filing liens against them if they know what they're doing.
Right. Yeah. And then I had another question right now, but I'm totally blanking out. So, I mean, if you want to move on, if there's someone else who's waiting in line while I'm trying to remember, you know, I can tap back in. But, you know, if you want to continue doing what you're doing.
I'm going to let her talk, because she said she actually had something to say in regards to your situation. So I'm going to turn her microphone back on, and I'm going to turn yours off, and you can listen in to our conversation. And if you have any questions, just press 1 again, and I'll turn your microphone back on.
Sounds Gucci. Thank you.
No problem.
Hello.
All right. Yeah. Sorry about that, Candace. But go ahead.
Oh, you're good. What I was going to actually say, this case is actually null and void. And the reason why I say that is because it is a fundamental right for us to be able to travel. They cannot proceed.
Yeah, he's right. I completely agree with him. But like I just said, it's so controversial that they're not going to – they're not going to be like, let me put it like this. I'm not disagreeing with you or him, but to put it in layman terms so y'all can understand this, you are out of your minds if you think these people are going to tell you, you know what, you're right. You do have a right to travel. We are violating your due process rights, and we are violating your right to travel. You know what, we fucked up, my bad. So what we going to do is, we just going to vacate this judgment. We're going to close this case out and so on. You crazy if you think that they're going to do that and leave that on the public record. They are never, ever, 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 ever going to do that. That's why they don't tell people the nature of the action.
Well, see, that's another thing why I'm going to be speaking with the sheriff, because it's actually the sheriff's responsibility. Because a lot of times, okay, so they're locking people up for driving issues, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's actually the sheriff's responsibility to make sure that each and every inmate has had due process. Nobody, absolutely nobody, is supposed to be stepping a foot in that jail unless the sheriff has made sure he has given due process to each and every inmate.
Yeah, but they're not doing this under common law jurisdiction. They're doing this under admiralty jurisdiction. That is what they're doing. Under
correct.
The common law, you would be,
however,
under the common
however,
law, you would be correct. But they're
however,
not.
However, here's the thing, though.
Go ahead.
Even though they're going by admiral, maritime, and administrative law, the supreme law of the land is the Constitution. It is the Bill of Rights. Period. In the state of Alabama, I can tell you by code, Alabama Administrative Code out of 1975, 1-3-1, states that they adopted the England law. The England law is common law. So
by law, not only through
the Constitution, but also through the Alabama Administrative Courts or that Administrative Code or whatever, they're supposed to be going by common law, but they don't.
Yeah.
And
they do. They're supposed to, but you just read me a statute. I don't care what the statute says. There are no statutes in common law at all. So that even if the legislature wouldn't have never done that, it still wouldn't have mattered, because common law is just opinion. It's just court opinions, and it's God's law. That's basically what common law is. That's why equity and common law works hand in hand. There are no statutes in equity, and there are no statutes in common law. None.
Right. And you're right about that. However, and that's what I'm saying, it's the people that has let all of this go through the way that it has.
We all need to
come together and get up, you know, with our sheriff. Our sheriff has signed an oath, just like the judges do, just like the lawyers just like anybody who is in the public, including your teachers, including CPS, they all sign an oath. They all have a bond on them.
Yep.
And a lot of people don't know that.
I know the city councilmen have bonds. The mayor has a bond. All of the judges, all of the prosecutors, the school districts. All these folks got bonds, man.
Yeah,
all of
absolutely.
Them,
all of them
have bonds, every single one of them. And where their bonds are going to be, if you're listening and you don't know where their bonds are, their bonds for duly elected public servants, meaning public servants that were, most public servants that were actually elected by the people, their bonds are going to be with risk management. They're going to be covered under the state's blanket bond. They don't have their own separate bond. They're covered under a blanket bond of the state of Alabama.
I was wondering about that.
Yep, that's
now,
what that's. Some of them have their own separate bonds, like probate judges. Probate judges have their own separate bonds. The sheriff has his own separate bond. But the judges, the so-called judges of the district courts, municipal courts, circuit courts, they're covered under the state's blanket bond, and so is the prosecutor. They're covered under the state's blanket bond.
Now, I will tell you, when I actually had sent a letter off to Randolph County, because they're legitimately trying to double jeopardy me, literally. They didn't call me to come to plea for a charge I've already been to prison for 4 times to plea on this charge, okay? Not to mention, you know, me losing my child and everything like that. It's more than double jeopardy at this point, because they done took life, and they done took liberty, and they done took pursuit of happiness in my situation. However, on LibGuides, it's godort.libguides.com. I can't remember exactly what section it was, but I actually found Alabama's public officials insurance company, and I found the actual attorney's insurance company as well.
Yeah, they have insurance too. Most cities are going to be covered via the Alabama Municipal Insurance Corporation. Almost, I called a woman there one time, and I asked her how many cities did they insure, and she told me about 95% to 98% of all of the cities in Alabama have insurance through them.
I found the public officials was through Alpha, actually.
Which ones?
All the public officials.
Maybe. I know under the state's blanket bond, I think they probably get new insurance every 1 or 2 years or something like that. The last I checked, they were insured with a company out of Maryland, if I'm not mistaken. And they have a blanket bond. They have a blanket bond. As a matter of fact, when I'm not sure if I told you this. Hold on before I tell you this. Caller 4384, I think it's the guy in – that was you, Candace. I'm sorry. Caller 1233, the caller in Arizona. If you have a question, I see you still have your hand up, but it's been up for quite some time now. So just press 1, and so it'll take you out of the queue. And if you have another question, press 1 again, and it'll put you back in the queue and your hand raised. That way I'll know that you have a new question and you want to talk. What was I going to say?
Municipal Insurance Corporation.
Oh, what I was about to say, Candace, was when I sued those police officers in federal court at the settlement conference, it was the magistrate judge, the two police officers who I sued, their attorney, and there was this woman there. I didn't even know she was a party to the case. She was their insurance adjuster. That's who she was. They had insurance. So she was there to negotiate the settlement. She was there to get the lowest settlement possible. That was her whole purpose there. So in other words, I filed an insurance claim against it. That's basically what this whole lawsuit thing is. It's an insurance claim. They have insurance. That's basically what this was. And they had about, I think they were insured up to about $4 million per rights violation.
Yeah.
All right. I have somebody else with their hand raised. Do you want to hold on, Candace, and we finish this conversation up?
Okay. Yeah, because I got some things I want to run by you to see what you think about it.
Okay. All right, caller 1233. You're back on the line. Back on the air.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that, like, when you guys were talking about, you know, the fact that a statute was cited, that doesn't that just kind of just allude more to the fact that it's a court of admiralty or the admiralty jurisdiction? Because, yeah, like, if it's over a statute, that's form versus, you know, common law or equity where it's substance.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. It's I'm convinced that is those are the only two jurisdictions that we need to litigate cases in, and that's common law and equity. All the other stuff, that is for fiction. Maritime is for fiction. That's it.
Right. Yeah.
Those the only two jurisdictions we need to litigate is common law and equity, and I'm 100% sure now that I can draft both a common law complaint and a bill in equity. In common law, they call them declaration, and the complaints or whatever they call them actions. In equity, it's called a suit, and the complaint is not called a complaint. It's called a bill in equity. But they're just changing the names of all of this stuff, but it's all the same stuff. It all works the same exact way. And it's all based
right,
on the facts.
Yeah.
It's all based on the facts of the case. So, like, if you're trying to sue somebody under the exclusive jurisdiction of the common law jurisdiction, what I would do, I would cite the basis for the court's jurisdiction, and I wouldn't use any statutes. What I would use is I would use the Constitution. In other words, I would use the document that created the court, which is the Constitution. I would cite my facts in support of my facts, and I would cite, you know, my cause of action, my common law cause of actions, and I wouldn't pay with so-called any Federal Reserve note. I would use gold or silver. That's what I would do. And that's pretty much it. That's it. I'm actually going to do that. I'm going to try it out, and I'm going to see what's going to happen. I'm going to try it out, and I'm going to see what – I'm not citing any statutes. None of it. Ain't no statutes of limitations in common law.
Right, right. So then, kind of going back to like, you know, if I were to file my paperwork in the civil proceeding, would you just use the all caps name, or would you, you know, for like this situation where they pulled me over? So, even though it's civil in nature or commercial in nature, you know, would you come in under special appearance? When you do that, are you using the all caps name still? You know, you're just coming in like, you know, buying through the
yeah.
undersigned authorized representative, or are you still just, or at that point, are you using the
no,
normal
what,
spelling
what,
of your name?
What I do is, first off, let me tell you this. You are sovereign. You are who you say you are. Okay. You can change your name whenever you want, and you don't need a statute. You don't need a it doesn't need to be adjudicated in order for that. I can show you cases that actually say that. But what I do is, since I like for example, you the people of Arizona are sovereign. Okay, so you are an extension of Arizona's sovereignty. Without you and all of the people in Arizona, there is no Arizona. So I come in as the so-called state, and I don't say comes now the state of whatever. I just say, like, I would say Arizona comes now. I would probably use my first name. I wouldn't use a last name, and then I would say hereinafter Arizona on a special appearance in his sovereign capacity as one of the people. So, you know, you get what I'm saying? That's how I plead my case. They know exactly what you're talking about, man, if you do that. They not dumb. They know what you're talking about. If they don't, they don't need to be sitting on that bench if they don't know what you're talking about. But and you make a special appearance. Never make a general appearance. I always make a special appearance. I filed something in court one day. It was against some traffic tickets. Let me see if I still got it. I'm gonna read it to you.
So in my situation where the case is already closed out, I can still do that. Like I can, you know, come under special appearance at any point.
If the case is already disposed of, probably not. Probably not. I mean, did you go to jail? Did you serve time on it? Did you pay the so-called fines and fees and all that stuff or whatever? If you did that, I wouldn't even worry about it if I did all that. That's just me personally speaking.
Right, yeah.
I'm going to read you something I wrote. And what you can do is you can just, this is something you can just type in, I mean, you can just edit this to fit Arizona because all of this stuff is pretty much the same. Hold on. Give me one second. I'll be right back. Hold on. All right. So just to give you an example of what I was just saying, when I had some traffic tickets sometime last year or whatever, and they all just got dismissed. But this is what I filed. I call this a demand of nature and delegation of authority. And I said, comes now, Isaac, here and after Alabama, a people in his sovereign capacity and as chief representative for the all caps name under duress and on a special appearance to demand this body corporate inform Alabama of the nature of each accusation forthwith. And I have a lot of footnotes in here, so I'm going to read you these footnotes. Let's go here. So, let's see. This footnote right here says it all. Alabama, when I say Alabama, I'm talking about me. That's who I'm talking about when I say Alabama. Alabama demands all officers of this body corporate participating in any of these patently executive administrative quasi-judicial proceedings adduce its charter because they have a charter. They were granted a charter by the legislature. That charter is their constitution. I need to read this charter to see if you have the authority to do this, because I did not authorize my public servants to authorize you to do this. So I need to see your charter. Anyway, adduce its charter and show affirmatively on the record of this agency, I'm calling it an agency because it's an administrative agency, its authority to prosecute Alabama in his court for allegedly violating public policy duly enacted by his subjects without his consent forthwith. Moreover, Alabama does not understand the nature and cause of the accusations, whereas the patently conclusory frivolous complaints are devoid of the prerequisite elements of the laws, personal jurisdiction, venue, and nature of the accusations. Until the prosecutor properly avers each said prerequisite in the manner mandated by due process, Alabama is unable to plead to the charge, i.e. tax, because Alabama cannot rebut unsubstantiated presumptions. So on and so forth like that. That's just something I said. Long story short, they dismissed that. And then, of course, I cited a few cases in support of my contention. For example, I said it is clearly established law and known by Alabama that in America, the people, not their governments, are sovereign. And then I cite a case in support of that. Another thing, it says, what constitutes a state? This is very important. I want you to listen to this. A justice cited this. His name is Justice Peyton Halls from Georgia. But this is a principle. That's why I put it in my case, because it's a principle. He says, what constitutes a state? It is not our cities or our farms. It is not our ports, mountains, or plains, but people. People constitute a state. If you take away the people, you don't have a state. Does that make sense?
Can you say that one more time?
You need me to read all of it or just some of it?
Just like the last sentence.
I said, it is not our cities or our farms. It is not our ports, mountains, or plains, but people. People constitute a state. So let me ask you this. If you take away all of the people in Arizona right now, do you have a state or do you just have just a ghost town? Ain't nobody there. It's nothing. It's just
just land, geographical location.
Yeah, that's it. People constitute a state. You are the state. You are an extension of the state sovereignty. The state is not nothing without you. So I always come in as the so-called state, even though I don't use the name state. I just say the name of the states, for example, Alabama. So if I'm in Alabama, I'm going to say Alabama. If I'm in Georgia, I'm going to say Georgia. And I'm going to be referencing Georgia into myself.
Right. So, and then I heard you mention footnote. So before you continue on, I guess just like a little side question. What is the importance of footnotes, or like when do you choose to use a footnote versus incorporating that into the body of your document?
All right, let me, for example, I'm going to give you some examples right now. Let me go back here. So in my document, I titled this pleading, let's see, it says, comes now Isaac here and after Alabama a people. After the word people, there's a footnote number 4. So basically, you're just providing commentary on why you're doing what you're doing and why you're saying what you're saying. So in footnote number 4, if you go down here, it says, it is clearly established law and known by Alabama that in America, the people, not their governments, are sovereign. So I use the term people and not citizen. Okay, there's another footnote in here. The city where I got these tickets is called Mobile. So, of course, the city of Mobile would be the so-called plaintiff. And under it, I said a corporation. But there's a footnote after the city of Mobile. There's a number 1. So you would scroll down to that first footnote, and this is what it says. So I'm basically providing commentary on what the city of Mobile is. So this is what it says. City of Mobile is also a legal fiction juristic person subject that has a Dun and Bradstreet number, i.e., and then I list their Dun and Bradstreet number. Dun and Bradstreet is a mercantile agency in the business of collecting data about the financial status, ability, and credit of corporations engaged in business. Mercantile means relating to trade or commerce. Commercial, having to do with the business of buying, selling, and relating to merchants. You see what I'm saying? So I'm letting them know, I know what y'all are doing. I know what the city of Mobile is. It's a corporation. It has a DUNS number, and it's engaged in business. That's why it has a DUNS number. That's why I put all that stuff in there to let them know I'm not a dummy. I know what y'all are doing.
Right, yeah. I mean, I didn't even think about incorporating stuff like that, but it's good just to have less room for them to just kind of like make you look like you're crazy,
mm-hmm.
or just, you know,
mm-hmm. yeah.
make an example yeah. out of you.
Yeah, when you do stuff like this, you're putting them on notice that you're not a dummy. You know what they're doing. And so they need to be very, very, very careful with you while they're in there conducting business on the public record with a court reporter in there. They stuff like this scare these people, man, because they're not supposed to know this stuff. You're not supposed to know this. Give me 1 second. Candace, if you're still on and you have a question, press 1, because I see your hand still raised, but I don't know how long it's been raised. So press 1, it'll take you out of the queue, and I'll press 1 again, and that way I know you have a new question. Sorry about that. Let's go back. Am I helping you with what I'm telling you? Am I explaining it to you into a way the way you can understand it?
Oh, 100%, brother. You're giving me a whole new perspective of, you know, just things that I didn't even think about that'll just help me out even more, so that, like, I just have less of a chance of them making an example out of me or laughing at me or trying to just, you know, dismiss me or whatever.
Gotcha, gotcha. Because they will, but you are not crazy. That's why I stopped showing my face in videos and just started showing people cases. That's why I downloaded copies of these judges' buns. I bought these copies, and I made videos of it to show people that they do have buns. And no, you are not crazy. You know what I'm saying? You're not crazy. They want you to think that you're crazy. You are not crazy.
Right, yeah. And they're only doing that just for for everybody else so that, you know, when they see this, they're like, oh, let's not try that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not crazy. You are not crazy. That's why I just show cases. I don't even show my face no more. I just provide commentary and read cases. That's it. When I tell you a bond is a contract and the nature of the action is admiralty, that's why I made that video. They're not courts. They're administrative agents. Because I want people to see this stuff. I'm putting it right in your face. I need y'all to see this. That is what they're doing. They're filing lawsuits against people. And once they get a conviction or a judgment, so to speak, then they proceed to file a lien against you. That's what they're doing. This is
right,
business.
Yeah. And sometimes, honestly, it's right in front of your face when they give you whatever ticket the officer gives you. Like the probably about a month or two ago, they stopped my brother for jaywalking and they gave him a ticket, and right there on the ticket it literally says that it's a civil violation. You know, so if you just look at something like that, you just be like, oh shit, like this ain't this wasn't even really like an actual law. It's just like they're commencing a civil action against me.
It's they call it malum prohibitum. It's a crime because somebody said you can't do it. Just to think of this. If these people cannot tell you that you can't smoke weed, man. This is your body. If you let these people tell you that you can't smoke weed, you might as well let these people tell you that you can only go to the bathroom 5 times a day and you can only have 6 cups of water.
Right. And the thing is it's not you that can't smoke weed, or it's not you that can't possess a weapon. You know what I mean? It's the legal fiction that they're coming after for the commercial action.
Mm-hmm.
So,
their jurisdiction is everything that they only have jurisdictions, in my opinion, over fiction. And you can't see this stuff. You can't see the city of the state of Arizona. It's a fiction. You can't see it. It's a fiction. You can't see school board. Like, they don't. These are fictions that you're dealing with, and because they're fictions, they can only living flesh and blood men and women can animate these fictions and do business in the name of these fictions. So their jurisdiction, this stuff is not tangible to a certain extent to where you can actually see it, and that's what's confusing people and throwing people off, because they're thinking that you can actually see it. You can't see this stuff. You can't. I've read cases to where they were talking about North Dakota was buying. North Dakota and the United States, they were doing some business, but in the case, they were referencing these two entities as if they were separate, distinct entities. That's how they worded it, because they are. They doing business,
right?
And
just like
they do business with each other, they're doing business with you just like that, under the guise of a so-called crime or something like that. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
No, you're good, brother. I was just going to say that, that's really the only reason why they have jurisdiction over you is because you grant them that power, and you grant them that power the moment that you identify as a United States citizen or, you know, the commercial fiction, the legal fiction.
That's another way of looking at it, too. You can be 100% right in all of your arguments about, you know, you're not a U.S. citizen, you are an inhabitant or a state national, whatever. You can be 100% right proving that they don't have jurisdiction, and they're going to ignore your ass because they have a courtroom full of people in here, and they don't want these people to know what the hell is going on, because as soon as people find out what the hell is going on, these people are going to get mad, and they're probably going to kill these people or probably jail them or something like that, put them in prison or something like that. They terrified. They not finna,
right,
they not,
yeah.
They not finna tell y'all none of this stuff, man. They not gonna say it in on the record. That's why I like to go and read the old cases, because I'm not sure if you know, you probably seen a video where I mentioned it. Go ahead and say what you were gonna say, and I'm gonna read you something right quick.
Cool. Yeah, you know how you were saying that basically they won't say that stuff into the record, and I have a few buddies where they've been in those scenarios where they won't, basically because the courtroom is full or there's other people in there, they just proceed as if they're dismissing what that person was saying.
Mm-hmm.
However, once the court proceeding is done, the very next day they go and look, and the case is dismissed, or there's no record of it.
I've had that happen to me. I've had that happen to me a couple times. I've had that happen to me a couple times. Yep, you're absolutely right.
Yeah,
you're absolutely right.
At the end of the day, it's court's not even necessarily supposed to be happening in person anyways, because if you do it on paper like it's supposed to be,
mm-hmm.
it's likely that you probably won't even have to have a hearing, like go to the hearing. It won't even be scheduled, because it'll just be handled, whether it's thrown out or, assuming that you're presenting the right information to prove that they don't have the jurisdiction and that the case should
You're absolutely right. When I filed my lawsuit against the police, we were going through discovery. Discovery will determine if you're going to win or lose before you even get a jury in to decide the case. So what I'm trying to get you to understand is all of the objections and all of the evidence, all of that stuff is already done before they even call the jury in there, and they just put on a show for the jury. They've already made their objections. They already have the evidence that they need. They already have their witnesses and so on and so forth like this. They already have all that stuff.
Right.
Before they summon a jury, they already have that stuff.
Right.
Let me read you something right quick. This is from 1867. You probably seen me do a video on this. This does not just apply in Alabama. This is a principle. When you understand sovereignty, you understand that this is a principle. So this is what it says. No doubt, the ultimate sovereignty, the government making sovereignty, resides in the people. So what he just said, the power to create government resides in the people. But after a government is once formed by the people, they can only exercise this sovereignty, meaning the power to create another government, after they already created the government. They can only exercise this sovereignty by revolution, or in the manner they have prescribed to themselves in the Constitution. This tells you right here that you can overthrow your own government by revolution.
Right, yeah. And I mean, not to necessarily go off topic, but that's just part of the reason why they're trying to take away our guns.
Yeah, exactly.
That way we can't do that or have, less power to basically defend ourselves against tyranny.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. You are absolutely right. And that does not just apply everywhere. Like I said, that applies everywhere. Everywhere.
Right, yeah.
All of this stuff doesn't belong to them. All of this stuff is held in trust. The land, the water, the trees on the land, the water on the land, the fish in the water on the land, the minerals on the land, the public offices, all of this stuff is held in trust by public servants who are trustees. All of it, I don't care what all of it is. And you are the beneficiary of that contract or that agreement or whatever you want to call it, which is the Constitution. That's why the Constitution does not apply to you to the extent to where it restricts what you can and cannot do. It doesn't say what you can and cannot do. It says what they can and cannot do. Go ahead.
You mentioning about, we're the beneficiaries. And so doesn't that kind of just create the scenario where they're committing fraud when a bond is placed in and the state's acting as a beneficiary and, you know, treating you as the trustee.
Does
a signature bond kind of constitute as like I guess is a bond, there's just different names for a bond?
They have all types of bonds. They have bonds in common law. I think there's three bonds in common law. I think one's a simple bond. I have to go and read that case again, but I did a video on it. It's on my YouTube channel. It's called Common Law Bonds versus Admiralty Bonds. Notice they don't call them admiralty bonds. They call them statutory bonds. That's what they call them. Ain't no such thing. There is no statutory jurisdiction. So why are you calling them statutory bonds? Why not just call them Admiralty bonds? That's what they're doing.
Right. That's the other part that I want to get better at understanding is basically bringing up trust law within the matter and I guess like pointing out and proving when they're committing that fraud of, you know, acting as a beneficiary or, you know, just down that rabbit hole.
To be honest with you, I don't even think they're acting as the beneficiary. They're acting as the plaintiff in a case. That's what it's in all the cases. That's what it seems like to me. They're acting as if they are the actual injured party. But they're doing it in the jurisdiction of fictions, because you can't litigate in common law jurisdiction. Fictions can't.
Right, yeah. And that's why that just goes into the contract law, too, is just that one of the principles is you can only contract, like can only contract with light. So, you know, a dead entity can only contract with a dead entity.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense to me. That makes so much sense to me. But this stuff is, I promise you, man, this stuff is so easy, bro. It's so easy because all of it is the same thing. It all starts with the facts. You plead facts. Like if you're filing a common law lawsuit or whatever, you plead facts without statutes. If you're going to litigate under the jurisdiction of common law, you need to have some gold or silver or whatever. And the remedy that you ask for, that you seek, needs to be a remedy that is exclusively applied to common law jurisdiction. That's it. That's all you're doing. Or if you're going to do it in equity, you file your bill in equity. You file your gold, I mean, you make some gold and silver. You base your bill on equity and facts, and then you ask for a remedy that is exclusively applied to equity. That's it.
Right, yeah. And I totally agree with you that all of this stuff is very, very simple, and you start finding out how easy it is to win. But it's just that because it's new and it's a lot of information to learn, that it's like can come off as overwhelming. Like one of the simple things that I've learned that has helped me out so much is the fact that the prosecutor or, you know, the opposing party's attorney, if they try to allege something, that's hearsay. Because they're not a witness.
They're not a witness.
You know, and so just knowing that how simple that is objection, hearsay. That's not, you know, so that can't be facts. It can't be entered into the record as facts. But
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I just had to say this. It's common sense when you think about it. So can you testify to a crime you didn't see? Hell no.
Nope.
No, nobody can do that. How can you? You didn't see it. How do you know what happened?
Yeah.
And you didn't see it.
Because just going off the definition of a witness is somebody with firsthand knowledge, which means somebody that has to have experienced it, been there.
Exactly. That's just like, let's say you married, and there are allegations against you saying that you cheated on your wife or something like that. And she believes these allegations because somebody told them to her, even though they don't have proof about it. That's basically what that is.
Right, yeah.
That's very similar.
And it's funny, too. And it's funny, too, like, even when you're paying attention to what these attorneys will put into the record and the paperwork that they file, it's just, like, at first, it all looks scary and intimidating because it's so well-written, but then you start paying attention. Because I think the fundamental thing that just will help anybody out is knowing the court rules and procedures.
Mm-hmm.
And once you know that, you'll just realize that, like, all this stuff that they put in, a lot of it is just not even compliant with court rules and procedures. Or it's not an actual declaration.
Doesn't even apply. I'm going to give you an example. In my case, when I sued the police, their attorney, he answered the complaint. He filed a shotgun plea because he didn't know how to answer the complaint. And he came back with all of these so-called affirmative defenses. Some of them weren't even affirmative defenses. They didn't even apply to the case. They were irrelevant. And they were vague. It was just a bunch of stuff, man, a whole bunch. So he pissed me off. He did it four times before I filed a motion to strike. When he did it the fourth time, I said, you know what, I don't have time for you. I'm just going to file a motion to strike. And the judge, he struck some of his affirmative defenses. He struck them because they're not affirmative. He didn't even... Some of the stuff he was saying that were affirmative defenses were not affirmative defenses. Some of them did not apply to the case because I didn't sue. Like, for example, he was claiming immunity under some statute that statute was only applicable to a city. So since I didn't sue the city, why are you claiming immunity under this statute if this statute is exclusively relating to a municipality that is claiming immunity? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, 100%.
He was desperate. He did everything.
I've had experience where, you know, the attorney will try to submit a declaration, and it's just like, well, for one, it wasn't even a valid declaration just for the fact that it was missing certain elements such as, being under the penalties of perjury. The attorney's not even a first-hand witness anyways to be stating this, so it's just invalid. Again,
they do it all the time, man. They do it all the time, but you don't know this.
So that just goes to what we're saying is that it is very simple and very easy to overcome a lot of these things. It's just you just have to learn the information so that you can put yourself in the position to see it and overcome it.
I agree 100%. So it's so easy. That's why I made, hopefully these videos are helping y'all that I do. I made a video called It's All About the Facts, part one and part two. And then in part two, I kind of explain to you what they do, how they copy and paste the statute that they allege that you violated. And then they twist it up a little bit, put your name in it, and they reword it just a little bit. But they don't have any facts to support how they came up to the conclusion that you violated the statute. They do that everywhere, man. Everywhere. They always do that.
Right, yeah. And I think that's just... Go ahead.
No, you good. Go ahead.
I think that's just like another point that I'm going to bring up in trying to get this thrown out is that there was no facts entered into the case. You know, the police officer didn't even go into... testify or anything, you know, in regards to my DUI, because at that time I wasn't even in this space at all. I hired an attorney to try to handle it for me, and so, you know, obviously since there was no testimony or anything entered into the evidence, it was just more of like the attorney entered on my behalf that I was pleading guilty, you know, things just went that route.
You know, all this stuff is trial and error, man. If you knew back then I'm quite sure it probably wouldn't have happened, but you just didn't know. You know, I've been to court before. I've gotten convicted on something, and they never even had a witness. The prosecutor, I didn't know this stuff, though, but the prosecutor picks up a piece of paper, and he starts reading. He says the defendant was seen driving, blah, 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 and such was found in the defendant court. Like, he just reading from a piece of paper. No witness was there to testify to any of them. I didn't know and he couldn't testify. I didn't even know that that was just frivolous. I didn't know.
Right, yeah.
So I went to jail. It cost me 27 days. But now, you know, I know it won't happen again.
Right, yeah. So in a scenario like that, you ever thought about, like, if you can overturn that stuff that happened and get compensated for it? You think that's something that you can do?
I'm not sure if you know what? You might be right, because a witness's testimony is evidence, and you can't convict anybody without evidence. I would see that as being a due process violation, so it may not be a statute of limitations on that. I don't think it is based on that, so maybe.
Right, because, I mean, I would think of it as a similar scenario as to somebody who was wrongfully convicted. They did 10, 20, 30 years, and then they get out, and, you know, they get compensated for their time of the wrongful conviction.
That makes sense. That makes sense. What else? I was gonna say something else. I forgot what I was gonna say though. I really forgot. Oh boy. 15 minutes. I'm gonna have time. What is it? So
yeah.
How like, I'm not sure how many of my videos that you watch, but I just need to hear this from somebody. Are these videos actually helping y'all? Are they helping you since I have you on the line?
Oh, yeah, 100%. You know, because when I was as you've been posting your videos, you know, I'm still new to this. I barely got into this space, I want to say, probably like within January, February. And so just from doing the research that I'm doing and watching your videos like just help out so much, because you do such a great explanation, and just instead of just sticking to the jargon that's like, you know, the complex words and the way that they structure these sentences, you break it down into an understandable and digestible form to where it's like, oh man, like it's not as complex as I thought it was, or it's just like, okay, I'm getting it now. Like it's,
yeah, I appreciate it, man.
You know, especially when you do your videos, when you do your simple videos of just like how simple it is to draft the motion.
Okay, that video helped.
It's just
like, that's good.
Yeah, definitely. And just like the way you explain things, it definitely helps me understand the concept of everything a lot better. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that I'm here perfect at understanding everything, you know, but I from my experience being so brand new into this space, and being able to have the level of understanding that I have now, I just, you know, think that like the way that I'm grabbing it and getting it from you is just helping me out so much.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it, man. I really do. That makes me feel so good. That just makes me feel so good, because these people, it's not just in Alabama, and I know it's not just in Arizona. It's everywhere, and they just terrible. They tear these so-called judges, they awful. Some of them are good, but it just, the bad drastically outweighs the good. And it's
right,
terrible.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
And I was one of the guys that had commented recently where I was saying that the judge made a faulty ruling, and that happens sometimes, you know, whether it's deliberate or indeliberate. And really it's just like anything else that happens, you know, you just have to call it out. And if you don't call it out, then it's just going to be presumed that everything is flowing as it should be.
Yeah, that's basically how it works. That is basically how it works. I'm still trying to figure out I'm under the impression that they are creating so-called courts, and they are investing in these courts, common law, quasi-common law jurisdiction and quasi-equity jurisdiction. That's what the impression that I'm under. And they are they're calling, they're really administrative agencies, but they're calling them courts. And I think they give, like, for example, they may call it the Superior Court of Arizona, but the Constitution already created in Arizona that does the exact same thing. But the court that the legislature created is limited on what it can do and what it cannot do, because it has to be an inferior court. It can't be a superior court to the one, to the court that the people created. So it's throwing people off. I think that's what they're doing in Alabama. I'm still trying to figure it out a little bit.
Right, yeah. I mean, I agree with you. I think that's happening everywhere, especially with the way that they're merging everything. And it just goes to confuse people and understanding that, like, the difference between when you're going to an actual court or before an actual judge versus
mm-hmm.
an administrative proceeding.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. Did they, I'm quite sure that they did, but did they merge the courts in Arizona too? I believe they did it almost
yeah.
everywhere.
Yeah, here in Arizona, they've merged everything. As a matter of fact, I was actually looking, and I believe I haven't found anything. So from my research, I think Arizona doesn't even have any chancery courts here.
Really? Let me see something.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can find something for you right now. Merger of, let me Google this right now, of law and equity. I'm going to tell you. Hopefully I'll find out when they did it in Arizona.
Because I was even trying to find, like, a specific chancery court here in Tucson, and I couldn't even find, like, a chancery judge. And then just – I was just getting results of, like, there's – even calling around to different kinds of courts and asking, you know, I don't know if they were playing dumb with me, but they're just like, I don't even know what a chancery is. Like, let me go ask somebody.
In some jurisdictions, they may call it a court of equity.
Right, yeah. And I even worded it that way. I was like, you know, you may have heard a bit of a court of equity, but, you know, yeah, it's just I haven't come across any of the courts here or anything that would say that there is a chancery court or chancery judges here in Arizona.
Okay. Let me see. This is from Arizona, 1980. Our Supreme Court has held that notwithstanding the procedural merger of law and equity, the equitable doctrine of part performance does not apply where money damages are sought. That's true, because a money damages is a remedy at law. So that makes sense to me. The merger of law and equity eliminates the distinction upon which the rationale that a party cannot be both plaintiff and defendant was based. I'm trying to see if I can find it. Let me see if I got somebody else with their hand up right quick before I get into this. No, I don't have anybody else with their hand up right. If you have a question, I have about 6 minutes left on the air. If you have a question and you want it answered, just press one and I'll try to answer.
At the moment. Yeah, no, at the moment, I don't have a question. I was just looking forward to hearing what you were about to get into.
Well, no, I was actually talking to the listeners on the call.
Oh, okay, my bad.
You good. It looked like they did it, but I don't know the year that they did it. I'm going to see if I can Google it. Merger of Law and Equity, 19. Let's see, we're going to try something like. Let's see, a law and respond by merger equity. I don't know where we are. I don't know when they did. I know they did it in Alabama. That's why I had to pull up that case and show people that that's what they did. That's what they did. Let's see.
So exactly, like, what does it mean when they say, like, the merger law and equity?
So basically,
like, does that just mean that they've, you know, within these administrative courts that they've incorporated or they can handle equitable matters?
Exactly. So basically it's this. So since before they merged the courts, you couldn't go to a court of equity and get a remedy at law. And you couldn't go to a court of law and get a remedy that was exclusively applicable to the jurisdiction of equity. You couldn't do that. So what they did when they merged these courts together, you can get both an equitable remedy and a remedy at law in the same proceeding. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, so an injunction is an equitable remedy. When you're suing somebody for monetary damages, that is a remedy at law. You see what I'm saying? So you can get monetary damages and you can get an injunction in the same proceeding as a result of them merging law and equity together.
Right, yeah. So then, quick question. If you were to type in ARS, which is Arizona Revised Statute 22-201, in there it says that, the Justice of the Peace has exclusive and original jurisdiction over all civil actions less than $10,000. So does that mean that they would have jurisdiction to handle an equitable, basically like, you know, the matter is the breach of contract and you're trying to seek specific performance?
I would say
yeah. So, and that's what...
Go ahead.
Because that's my understanding of it too. And not only that, but like, you know, I had a previous case where I got the equitable remedy of, I was granted a specific performance and I had just have this other civil case where I was basically trying to pursue the same thing, but it's with Bank of America, and the judge on her own will just closed out the case randomly. Like I had filed a motion for summary judgment and halfway through, like, because the due date is coming up on the 15th, and I would say it was on Thursday or Friday, she basically just put in a minute entry that she closed the case due to, she said that they didn't have jurisdiction over specific performance and to go over to the Superior Court, which they handle matters over $10,000, and she was just saying that the Superior Court is the only court where this action can be brought, and...
It sounds like she's lying. It sounds like she is lying to you. I'm not sure why she did that, but I can tell you that some judges, they don't want you to be right. They don't want to give you any type of credibility or credence to the fact that you actually know what you're doing because you're not an attorney.
Right, yeah. I mean, that's why I already filled out my motion, but tomorrow I'm going to file a motion for her to reconsider, basically to, you know, cancel out the case closure. But I've had that happen in another case, too, when I took TD Bank and I was filed in for a motion for default judgment, and the judge denied the motion for the default judgment. And the reason being was that I didn't provide a proof of service for the default judgment. And so I put in a motion for the judge to reconsider just for the fact that, like, you know, pursuant to the Arizona Revised Statute, I'm not obligated or required to provide proof of service. I can just give them, you know, like just mail it out. I don't need to provide the proof of service with, like, you know, the green card or any of that, which I mean, I do have anyway, so I'm using that to like just support it. But I use case law and there's on a revised statute to just basically say that, like, this is an improper ruling, you know, and state your grounds for the reason why you're able to rule this way.
Okay, look, I got about 25 seconds. He's about to hang up. But thank you for calling in, man. I really enjoyed the conversation with you, too, and I'm proud of you, man. Don't give up. Don't let them make you tap out.
You.
Keep fighting, man. Keep fighting.
Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate your time and energy, too, brother.
No problem. Peace, man.
Peace.
All right.